This episode is brought to you by Sombra, an award-winning artisanal mezcal handcrafted in Santiago, Matatlan, Oaxaca, Mexico.
Welcome to Pizza Quest. I'm Peter Reinhardt, a man on a never-ending search for the perfect pizza. This show is the audio version of the Pizza Talk YouTube series, where I engage in interesting conversations with some of the country's greatest pizza makers and other artisans. Thanks for joining me on this quest. All right, well, look what I've got. I've got my squeeze bottle of Mike's Hot Honey and even a little packet of the, I guess this is a new one. We're going to talk to Mike Kurtz, the founder and creator of Mike's Hot Honey today on Pizza Talk. I'm Peter Reinhardt. Welcome. Thanks for joining us. And I'm excited because, you know, we've had interviews with a lot of pizza makers and we've talked with tomato growers, but now we're kind of moving into another category with Mike because we're getting into sort of the ingredient side. This is a, you could say maybe call it a condiment. It's an item in its own right, and it lives beyond pizza and in other parts of the food world, but it really made its mark in the pizza world, and Mike is the creator. Mike Kurtz, thanks for joining us today on Pizza Talk.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Peter.
I mean, you've got a great story to tell, and we shared it already in a written form on Pizza Quest. So for those of you who haven't had a chance to read the interview with Mike, you know, feel free to go back and read that at your leisure. And we're going to maybe touch on some of the same points that we talked about in that interview, but maybe go beyond it as well. So I think where we need to start, though, is for people who don't know you, and many of the people who watch this are, you know, and know you from the Pizza Expo and the Northeast pizza shows where you are always a presence, but those who are not part of that pizza community are probably wondering, you know, what's the story behind Mike's Hot Honey and, you know, why hot honey? Why has hot honey become so hot? That's what everyone really wants to know. So maybe you can help, you know, catch us up a little bit. How did you get into all this?
Yeah. So it's been a long journey for me. The inspiration for my product actually comes from Brazil. My parents are both American. My mom's from DC, my dad's from Philly, but they met in Brazil in the 1960s. My dad was there in the Peace Corps. And when I was in college, I studied Portuguese. I was a Portuguese major. That's how I ended up in the honey business. And I was studying abroad in northeastern Brazil. And while I was down there, I visited a small town. And in this town, there was a pizzeria that had jars of honey with chili peppers for drizzling on the pizzas. And I just loved the flavor combination. And when I got back to the States a year later, it was my senior year of college, I started experimenting with honey chili pepper infusions in my college apartment. So that was kind of the beginning. That was 2004. So I made it as a hobby for a long time. It was just something I did for my own personal use.
Yeah.
And graduated from college summer of 2005, moved to New York City, and started working in the music business. I was actually...
Mike, when you say working in the music business, what does that mean? I know in the interview you mentioned that, but what part of the music business, what did you do?
Yeah, my first job was in record sales. So I was actually selling CDs for a record label back when record stores were still selling CDs. But that's actually my family's business. My grandparents met singing in a show in Atlantic City. They were both singers there. They used to sing together at the 500 Club, which was a club in Atlantic City. And so they were in the music business. My grandfather was the MC at a place called the Latin Casino.
Which oh my God. He was Center the MC City. At the Latin Casino. I used to go to the Latin. I'm from Philly, you know, did you ever actually live in Philly? Did you grow up in Philly as well?
No, my dad did. My dad grew up in Philly, but, the Latin Casino sadly was already gone by the time I was born. I think it went
an amazing club. Mid-70s. Yeah. Just over the border in New Jersey. We used to go there to see, I saw Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin. I saw some great acts there. So
you probably saw my grandfather on stage. He used to introduce the main act. He would tell a couple jokes. Sometimes he'd like sing a tune and then he'd introduce the act. And then, yeah. So So those my grandparents were in the music. My dad is a jazz saxophonist. My uncle's a drummer. I play piano. I studied ethnomusicology in addition to Portuguese, and I studied Brazilian music when I was in college. So my first job.
Where did you go to college, Mike?
I went to UMass.
Really?
So
okay.
I grew up in Amherst, Massachusetts, in Western Mass. Went to UMass, which is actually closer to where I grew up than my own high school. So, like, I was a real hometown kid. Did 1 year in Wisconsin my freshman year of college, and I ended up transferring back to UMass. And then my junior year, I studied abroad in northeastern Brazil in Salvador, which is about 30 hours north of Rio if you're driving up the coast.
Wow.
So I was there for a year, and that's really where the inspiration for the product came from. It's not that it's a Brazilian thing to put honey on your pizza. It just happened to be something I discovered at one place. And I just loved the flavor profile. So started making it in my college apartment, and pretty soon, like, I had friends and family that had tasted it, and they were into it, and I always called it Mike's Hot Honey from the very beginning. That's just like the name that I came up with. So they'd ask for bottles periodically, and I'd give them a jar or two, or sometimes I'd make a batch around the holidays to give out to people. But it was basically just a hobby for years.
How a lot of these things start, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of just eventually you sort of like speak them into existence. Like, I had a bottle in the break room at the record label I worked in. My actual sales territory was the Mid-Atlantic, and I worked for a record label called Putumayo World Music. They did compilations of music from different countries, so it's kind of like an introduction to the music of that particular country. And we were launching a new compilation every month. And so I'd go on the road and sell those albums into different record stores. But some of my biggest customers were actually the Whole Foods, because they had listening stations for those CDs inside the supermarket. So ironically, that ended up coincidentally, that ended up becoming like a, you know, big customer of ours in the honey business. And some of that experience was pretty, you know, applicable to honey, as it turned out.
It's nice when it works out that way.
Yeah. I mean, I was in my last job in the music business. I worked in record sales, and I worked in A&R, where I was like, I was in on the fourth floor of a office building on Lafayette, a couple blocks south of Astor Place in the East Village. And my job was to sort through all of the demos that would come into the record label. So I'd have my headphones on all day going through demos, and then I sort of was like the first pass. I was like the gatekeeper. So I sifted through all of the stuff that came into the record label and then passed those on to,
you know, I've heard the term A&R in music. I've never worked in the music business, so I have a lot of friends who have. But what does A&R actually mean? What do those letters mean? And is it kind of like, is it like talent scouting? Is that what it is?
Sort of, yeah. It's A&R is artist and repertoire.
And repertoire. See, I never knew. You hear the term, yeah, but you never know what it means.
I mean, it's kind of a vague term. Like, it can mean a lot of different things. But essentially, like, most record labels have an A&R. The A&R is the person that's out there scouting talent, that's developing talent, figuring out, you know, who the label is going to record. So, yeah, I mean, in our case, we weren't recording original albums so much as putting together compilations. So it was really just like scouting music to include on the compilation.
So somehow the music was an entree, you know, into a lot of connections. In fact, I was going to ask you, was Philadelphia part of your territory when you were at the Mid-Atlantic States?
Actually, it wasn't. I was the Carolinas. So I was actually your neck of the woods. I was mostly Carolinas. I was D.C. down to like South Carolina, or gotcha. Actually D.C. down to Atlanta.
I was going to ask you about Philly, because I would have thought maybe World Cafe would be one of your accounts, and also, you know, big music music venue. And a friend of mine hated that in Philly.
Yeah, unfortunately, it wasn't my territory, but But yeah, I know the World Cafe, and Philly in general is just a great music city.
And of course, also a great food city.
And a great food city. I mean, I could talk Philly all day.
Until recently, though, you know, nobody was putting honey on their pizza. I've known about the connection of honey and pizza for a long time because of, you know, some of the pizzerias, even in Colorado, where they would put a jar of regular honey on the table, and you would use it to finish off the bones of your pizza at the end of the meal and kind of make a dessert out of, you know, out of the edges. And it was great. I always felt like that was a cool way to finish it off. And then all of a sudden I'm seeing this addition of chilies. And of course you've got, I can even see the chilies, you know, floating in this honey. And I want to hear a little bit more about your formulation, because it's not just honey and chili. Anybody can just put hot peppers and chilies. You've spent some time kind of creating your own, maybe sourcing your own ingredients for that.
Yeah, I spent a lot of time testing out different types of chili peppers. You know, what's interesting about chilies is, like, each chili pepper, the heat will hit you on a different part of your palate. So, like, it's kind of interesting in your taste testing chilies to see how the heat sort of blooms on your palate. Some hit you up front, some hit you on the side, some are like almost like your full mouth, some hit you in the back. So the particular chili that we use hits you on the back of the palate, and I settled on that chili pepper because I like the way that the heat hit you. It allows you to sort of taste the flavor of the food that the honey is on. And then the heat kind of kicks in on the back of the palate on a little bit of a delay.
So it's kind of like the part of the finish of the taste. I'm going to have a little squirt of it again while we're talking and see if I can identify that flavor profile.
Yeah. So you taste the floral notes of the honey up front, and then the heat kind of comes in on about 1 second, 2 second delay.
Is this like a wildflower honey? Is that what you're using?
Yeah, so it's polyfloral wildflower. It just means that the bees are collecting nectar from a range of different flowers.
It's delicious honey in its own right, and it hits you right off the front. You know, like you said, right at the beginning, you get the floral sweet notes, and there's like maybe a 3 to 4 second delay, and all of a sudden you start to feel the chilies come in behind it.
Yeah. So, like, there was a period where I was just experimenting with different ways to create infusions. And I never wanted to use stabilizers in the product. So it took a long time to create a process that created a homogeneous solution without using any sort of stabilizers. I worked on that for almost 4 years of the business, like in the beginning where, yeah, I don't know if we're jumping too far ahead here, but like I met Paulie in 2010 when he was opening his pizzeria, Paulie G.
Paulie G, yeah. Yeah, we want to spend a little time. Maybe we'll talk more about that in our next segment, but I know that's where it launched for you. Let's lead up to sort of that moment where you and Paulie G came together.
But yeah, so like the process of infusing chilies into honey, there's a range of different ways you can do it, but I found that it was really difficult to create a homogeneous mixture where, like, oftentimes I would make an infusion, but the chili pepper particulate would totally separate from the honey very quickly. So it was an issue because, like, I couldn't build stock. That still happens a little bit, but not to the same extent that.
So it is.
Yeah.
It hasn't. It's emulsified or something. It's done something to where it's all blended in there.
Yeah.
Without giving away any secrets, can you tell us a little bit, what does it take to make that happen? It took 4 years to get there. So I know that's got to be part of your process, and we don't want to give away the store, but what did it take?
Yeah. I mean, I can't get into the fine details of the process, but I could tell you a little bit just about like the experience of creating that process, which is kind of interesting. Like I spent a lot of time experimenting on my own. Like I had a shelf in my apartment that was like a bookshelf that just had sample bottles, and I'd have like a little piece of tape on each bottle with the number and the date and some of the process specs on that particular batch. And I had like hundreds of these bottles. So you come to my apartment and it just had this bookshelf instead of books. It was just like hundreds of honey bottles on the shelf. All failed experiments basically. So I was, was trying and failing for a long time with different processes. And I started working with a food lab that was in Maryland, outside of Baltimore. I met a food scientist who I had sent some product to, and he just really liked it. And so he kind of took up my cause, just doing some pro bono work for me.
Nice.
And he actually couldn't figure out the solution. We worked on it for a few years, and we never figured it out. And so I was kind of like disillusioned, because at this point I had launched the product, and it was being sold in a very, you know, limited amount of distribution, and mostly just in New York and some mail order, but I couldn't like create product in advance. I'd have to fulfill every order. I'd have to pack every bottle to order.
Yeah.
So it just wasn't sustainable. Eventually I was home visiting my folks, over a weekend, and I went to the food science department at UMass, which is my alma mater. And I was honestly just like aimlessly walking around the hallways of the food science department on a Saturday. And I was just desperate, you know, like I had this issue where like people liked the product, they wanted it, but I just couldn't figure out how to get over this hurdle. And I was walking down the hallway, and this professor happened to be in his lab, and I just saw him. I had no idea who he was. I knocked on the door, and I had a bottle of the honey with me, and he let me in, and I chatted with him for a few minutes, and he didn't actually solve the problem for me, but he did drop some clues that eventually led to the breakthrough that unlocked larger scale production. And unfortunately I can't share what that breakthrough is with you, but
it is the point is really that it's not as easy as it looks, because it's not just a matter of mixing a couple ingredients and you got a product. When you're going public and you're going mainstream, you've got issues that the consumer doesn't even think about, like how do I keep it clear and not separating.
Yeah, and I think that's true for like most food products that are produced on a larger scale. People just don't, they might think it's very simple on the surface, but there's just a lot of complexity and wrinkles that go into producing things on a larger scale.
Yeah, it's funny, because it's like you say, if I told you, I'd have to kill you, right? If I told you how I did it. But also, it's like kind of if you were to take this to Shark Tank, let's say, and say, I need you to invest and get me to the next level. The questions they're going to ask is, well, what makes yours different from everybody else's? And nobody else has figured out that one little secret thing that you figured out is how to keep it, you know, as a smooth, homogenous product, which is, you know, the challenge of every entrepreneur is how do I differentiate myself from the pack? And so, you know, and I know for me, when I first experienced the honey, the hot honey, was at one of the pizza expos when I was judging pizza competition, because I live inside in North Carolina, so I'm not up in New York all the time. I haven't yet been in Pauly G's, which is on my bucket list of places to get.
Gotta go.
The planes let me fly again. But I noticed how many pizzas were coming in to the judging room, finished off with Mike's hot honey. And it wasn't just hot honey, it was Mike's hot honey. And so, you know, we're all kind of, so those of us who were new to it were going, well, what is this stuff? And why is everybody using it all of a sudden? It's kind of like it tipped over. It went from being a total unknown to being, you know, an overnight success with, what, a 10-year gestation. But it was an overnight success to us because we'd never heard of it before. Why do you think people are responding so well to this flavor combination?
You know, I think it's there's something about the way that the sweetness from the honey complements like the acidity of tomatoes on a pie, or the savory elements of a pizza, like cured meats that are on a pizza, and it just pairs really well with pizza. I mean, it's one of these things that like really hadn't been, most people had never experienced, and that at least initially that was really like the primary motivation for creating this stuff, because I was like, man, like nobody's experienced this stuff, but it's so good on pizza. Like, I got to make this so more people can try it. And like, you know, just to fast forward a few years, like I was a pizza hobbyist for a while. I was, my, one of my best friends here in Massachusetts. His family owned some pizzerias, so I was around pizza a lot growing up. And then when I moved to New York, I started making a lot of pizza at home. And you know, I remember the early days of Slice Blog when right. Adam Kuban was the editor at Slice Blog, and that was sort of like the place on the internet where a lot of the pizza community congregated to right. to kind of share information. Yeah. You know,
that's
that
people started getting familiar with terms like the underskirt. And every photo of somebody holding the pizza up showed the underskirt of the crust.
Yeah. Right.
You know, the Slice was a great, and it still is a great, you know, sort of community of people. And I think it really helped elevate the passion for pizza across America.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I learned a lot just from reading the articles there. And, you know, I sort of came in, I was exposed to a lot of different things on that site that I'd never read about or tasted myself before. So I was making a lot of pizzas at home and was on Slice a lot. I used to submit pizzas. I don't know if you remember My Pie Monday, where people would submit their pizzas to Adam and he would feature some homemade pizzas. I think I got a couple on there for My Pie Monday back in the day. But
you had kind of dipped your toe into the ring, so to speak.
Yeah, I was making some pizzas that I think if I look back on them now, I mean, I've looked back at the photos and I don't know that I'd be proud of them today, but I was just starting out at the time and trying to learn. And they definitely tasted good.
It's part of a discovery process. Pizza Quest itself, our website is dedicated to sort of this search for, you know, for meaning and self-discovery, you know, through pizza. And that's a perfect example of it. You know what I'd like to do, Mike, is let's take a break here. We're talking to Mike Kurtz, the founder and creator of Mike's Hot Honey. We're going to come back and we're going to talk about how Mike went from being sort of a home amateur pizza enthusiast to creating a product and actually ending up working with Pauly G and in Pauly G's pizzeria.
This episode is brought to you by Sombra, an award-winning artisanal mezcal handcrafted in Santiago, Mazatlan, Oaxaca, Mexico. Sombra owns and operates their own distillery, which ensures consistent quality, supply, and environmentally friendly production methods. Sombra is committed to sustainability, recycling distillation waste into adobe bricks to build homes for those in need. Learn more at SombraMezcal.com. That's SombraMezcal.com.
Mike's Hot Honey, or my squeeze bottle. I love the squeeze bottle. I cut off a little bit of the tip so I can get a really good flow. And I'm going to keep tasting this as we talk because I'm really enjoying the floral notes. It's a very, really bright floral honey. It's light, it's golden. I love the amber color, but it's more, I would say it's floral, I guess is the best word. And then that little hit of and it's not a little hit, it's a bold cayenne type, you know, pepper. I don't know what, and again, probably the particular pepper that you're using is part of your trade secrets, I would think. This is Mike Kurtz, by the way, the creator and founder of Mike's Hot Honey. Mike was giving us sort of the background of how he ramped up from a college student and somebody then working in the music business to sort of a fun amateur pizza enthusiast. We're just about at the story where it went from being this personal little product that you and your friends would put on your pizzas to moving into mainstream. And I dare say by the time people see this episode, it's very likely that pizzerias all over the country are now using Mike's Hot Honey. You'll tell us a little bit more about how far your reach has been. But let's take it from where we left off, Mike, and tell us for how you got from being a contributor on Slice and showing off your pizzas on Monday nights to taking it to the next level.
Yeah, so I was on Slice Blog a lot, just reading different articles, and I kept on seeing the same person showing up in the comments, Pauly G. I'm like, who is this guy? He's like a serial commenter. Like, he's commenting on every post.
Had he already, was he a professional then, or was he still kind of building his place?
Yeah, so he hadn't opened the restaurant yet, so I just knew him from initially just from being like a frequent commenter on Slice, You know, you see other people like Norma Knepp. Norma she's got a pizzeria in Pennsylvania, but she used to be on Slice a lot. But there's a lot of people from the community that I later met in person who I first just kind of knew from their handles on Slice. So I kept on seeing Pauly G in the comments, and then one day he was featured on Serious Seats. Adam Cuban went to his house in Jersey, and he had built a Neapolitan wood burning oven in his backyard. And they did an article about him, and they mentioned that he was planning on opening a pizzeria in Greenpoint, which is right near where I lived in New York. So right when he opened, I went down there because I wanted to check out the oven, and he had got Stefano Ferrara wood burning oven from Italy, built in Naples and shipped over on a container ship. And so I wanted to check that out and check out his pizzas. So I went there, and I was sitting in the corner of the restaurant having a pie, and he came by the table as he does pretty much for anybody who eats in his restaurant. You've probably had Pauly come by your table and ask how your meal's going.
So this is, but now he has opened in Greenpoint at this point. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Open the restaurant.
Okay. Yeah. So this is 2010. I think Pauly opened in March of 2010. So this is like, a couple months into his opening.
Hard to believe, down there. 10 years ago now.
Yeah. In 10 years. Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah.
So there you are eating your pizza. And what do you, wait, you whip out a bottle of your hot honey, right?
No, I didn't have any on me at the time. But I did mention it to him. Like, so he came by the table, and he was, we were chatting about pizza, and I was asking him all sorts of questions about his oven and his dough recipe. And he could tell I was like really into making pizza. And I was telling him about my experiments at home. And he was like, well, if you'd like, you're welcome to come down and become a pizza apprentice here after your day job. So I was, at the time, I was working for a booking agency in Midtown. And I was like, wow, this is a cool opportunity to actually really practice stretching dough, practice working on a real wood burning oven, and just kind of like learn the ropes. So I took him up on his offer, and I started coming in after my day job. In the evenings, I'd go there and just practice stretching dough and help out with like random kitchen work. And on one of the first days I was down there, I told him, I was like, look, I have this pizza condiment that I think you should really try. And at that point, it wasn't a packaged product. So the next night I was in there practicing, I brought a bottle for him to try, and he tasted it, and he really liked it. So he was like, hey, can you make this for the pizzeria? Is it, can you produce this at just enough for us to use on the pizza? So I said, sure, I'll make about a gallon at a time, which is like 12 pounds of honey. So,
well, wait, let me stop you right there for a second, because I want to ask, at that time, now we're talking 10 years ago, was the product the same as it is now, or was it still evolved? Did it evolve more afterwards? And where were you getting your honey from?
Yeah, so at the time, I was buying honey from a honey distributor in Pennsylvania. And I was getting it, by the gallon. Like, I wasn't buying, like, in bulk yet. I wasn't even buying, like, five-gallon buckets. And then once Pauly started using it, I started getting buckets. So I'd get like these 60 pound pails delivered to the pizzeria. Pauly, basically, like, once I was good enough stretching dough, I was fast enough, he started to put me on a actual dinner shift. So it took a while to practice. And once I was like fast enough, I started actually stretching dough. And like, anybody who's eaten that Pauly G's knows it's like he calls it the pizza theater, the area where in front of the oven is open to the floor of the restaurant. So it's a very interactive experience. So like, people dining in the restaurant can interact with the folks making pizzas, and the guys making pizza could see everybody eating at the restaurant. And
it's really like performance art, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, and I just loved it. Like, it was an exciting time. The restaurant was, you know, was new, and it became really popular very quickly, and it was always packed, and it was just fun to interact with people while they're eating their pizzas. So the operation is that there's one person stretching dough, there's one person topping pies, there's somebody working the oven, and then there's an expediter who's doing post oven toppings, cutting the pies, calling out new pies to the team. So it's a 4-person operation. At the time when I started, Pauly was still making pies at the restaurant. I was working with him and his son, Derek, who was 18 at the time. And Pauly, as he is known for, would go out to the floor of the restaurant and leave us. He would abandon us to go chat with customers.
Yeah.
And we'd fall behind on tickets. And so, like, it was really difficult because, like, when you leave us, we'd be stuck, and, you know, the pizzas were coming out late. So we got to a point where we realized, like, and I think Pauly came to this realization, like, he could be more effective, and he was better suited if he could just be free to be, you know, on the floor of the restaurant at all times. So that was like the early days of the restaurant. And we had the honey on this pizza called Fire Up the Del Boy. Del Boy is the nickname of his son, Derek. And Derek's favorite pizza was a hot soppressata pizza. And it was topped with this hot soppressata from Sala Maria Bigliese, which is a Sala Maria that's, I think it's on like 28th Street and 7th Avenue or 6th Avenue. It's right in Midtown Manhattan. It's been there for over 100 years, and they make really great soppressata.
Wow.
And the honey paired really well with the soppressata. And so we had this pie, Fire Up the Del Boy, and it was called Fire Up the Del Boy because every time the expediter would yell, "Fire up the X pie," and then you would throw the pie in the oven. So we called it Fire Up the Del Boy because the Del Boy was the pie, the soppressata pie without the honey. Fire Up the Del Boy was the pie with Mike's Hot Honey drizzled on top post oven.
So that's because Derek, who's the doughboy, I guess, in a sense, he loved that combination himself. So it was perfect because you want him over, you want Pauly over, and suddenly it's on the menu.
So it's on the menu. It was tomatoes, fresh mozzarella, parm, soppressata picante, and then a post oven drizzle of Mike's Hot Honey. And it was a hit. Like, I'd be there stretching dough, and I could see people's reactions to eating that pie. And it very quickly became like one of the top selling pies. And then one day, one of the customers was like, "You know, why don't you just call it the Hellboy?" Because it was called Fire Up the Del Boy. It was kind of a mouthful.
Yeah.
So then the name changed to the Hellboy.
The Hellboy
became like the Hellboy.
Like hot dough. Yeah. Got it.
Yeah. So it became the Hellboy at that point.
Hellboy. Okay.
Yeah, it went from Del Boy, Fire Up the Del Boy, to the Hellboy. So the Hellboy became like the top-selling pie on the menu, and I could see people's reactions to tasting it. And I'd be in the pizzeria, and people come up to me and say, "Hey, are you the honey guy? Like, we heard you're the honey guy. Where can we get this stuff?"
Yeah.
And I wasn't producing it, so I was, you know, I was just making it for Pauly's place. And so then I started packing like little, like, plastic pint containers of it. I go back to the kitchen, I'd fill up a pint and sell it for cash behind the pizza oven. And
had a little merch table going.
Yeah, no, I mean, occasionally people would ask for it, and I'd just fill up a little plastic pint container and sell it to them. So, like, that's kind of how it started. And then yeah. I think it was around November of that year, of 2010, I decided, like, all right, enough people are asking, I'm going to start actually bottling stuff.
Well, so, and as they say, the rest is history, because it took off from there. And so let's fast forward, and we'll come back a little bit, but let's fast forward to right now. So how far spread is the reach of Mike's Honey now?
Yeah, so, I mean, this is 10 years later. We're split roughly 50-50 between food service and retail. On the retail side, we're sold in about 16,000 doors across the country. Yeah. So
how does that translate into like either pounds or is there a volume measure? How many gallons of this stuff are you making? And where do you produce that much hot honey?
Yeah, so our production facility, so there's like a, I mean, obviously there's a long process of scaling up. That was probably the most difficult part of the whole growth of the business. But for the first 5 years, I produced it in the back of Paulie's Pizzeria, and he was closed on Mondays. So I had Mondays, I had the kitchen to myself, then I'd go in there and do production runs in there. And it was just a very, very basic system. And
I was,
yeah, I was in there by myself. I never had a helper. I literally just did packed every bottle myself, you know, labeled, capped every bottle.
Were you still working in the music business too? Did you still have your day job, or had you quit that and moved into full-time restaurant work?
So I was, when I started at Paulie's, I was working at this booking agency in Midtown, and I kept that job for a little while. And then at some point, Paulie got a liquor license and he was able to start selling beer and wine. And so I started tending bar there and making pizzas, and I still had my day job, and I was starting to get the honey off the ground. So at some point I was working as an assistant to a booking agent. I walked in his office and I was like, hey, you know, this pizza place I've been working in, I think I'm just going to start doing that full time now.
Wow.
And I was like, I've been making this honey on the side and people seem to like it. I think I'm just going to go for it. You know? And he was like, are you kidding me? Like, are you serious?
But it's amazing. It's like the classic American success story. It's when they make the movie of Mike's Hot Honey. By the way, who's going to play you in the movie? You know, and then it's really this classic story of, you know, starting in one direction and bootstrapping it up, and then all of a sudden it gets discovered, and you're a hit.
Yeah, I mean, it was like it got to the point where I was just like, you know, I had this prospect of one day becoming a booking agent if I really like stuck it out for many years. And I didn't really like the business that much. And the contract negotiation was kind of brutal and just wasn't for me. And I was really having fun making pizzas every night. And like, that just brought me joy, you know, working the dough, being in front of that oven, getting to eat lots of pizza. Like that was something I enjoyed. So it wasn't really making much money, but at the time I think my rent was like $400 a month. I had a bunch of roommates, so I was able to make it work. And so I quit my day job and started working in the pizzeria full time and started working on like scaling the honey. But yeah, the first
point,
5 years.
At what point did it kind of scale up to where it became a full time work? You going from, you know, working in the pizza and then doing this on the side, to becoming your primary focus?
Yeah, so it was maybe about 3.5 years in, I was able to kind of just commit full time to developing the honey business. I continued to work at the pizzeria like periodically, just as like a substitute on the pizza oven, or sometimes filling in for Paulie when he couldn't be there. But it was about 3.5 years in, and it took me about 5 years of just making it myself before I was able to scale up production. I think it was about like late 2014. I met a honey producer from upstate New York. And I had tried and failed many times to scale up production. It was, you know, I'd first gone around to like co-packers who packed sauces and quickly discovered that you really need equipment that's specific to handling honey. So then I started looking at different honey producers and honey packers who might be able to help me scale up. And none of them would work with me because they're all like, we don't want to risk cross-contaminating our pure honey line with your hot honey, because if you clean the line and some chili pepper gets into our pure honey, it's ruined. So I couldn't convince anybody to like help me scale up. And then finally I met a honey producer from upstate New York who had a bottling line in Fords, New Jersey. And he gave me a chance, you know, and he was like, look, you know, I don't know about your product. I don't know how it's going to work out, but like, you know, I'll work with you to try to figure this out. So we basically MacGyvered a production line. You know, there's no template for how to do it on a larger scale. And he really took the time to help me scale up. It's a, Grant Stiles from Stiles Apiaries. and he's still our he still runs our production line today.
Is it Styles Apiary's honey that we're using in the hot honey?
Yes. So up until very recently, we exclusively used Styles Apiary's. And so their hives are Jefferson County, New York, which is north central New York State. So it's wildflower from that part of New York. We recently outgrew their production and started sourcing honey from other parts of the country. So we're pulling from the Great Plains, which the Dakotas are probably the biggest honey producing states in the country. Mm-hmm. We're also pulling some honey from Brazil and Argentina, which is the first time we've sourced honey internationally.
But well, you're taking it back to your roots then, back to the where you first kind of created it.
Yeah. Yeah. So now our honey is produced with a mix of wildflower honey from the States and also Brazilian and Argentinian wildflower honey. But that change was very recent. Up until a few months ago, we were exclusively using New York State wildflower honey.
How many places did you say? How many outlets are there now for it?
So on the retail side, about 16,000 retail stores. What started with just a couple local retailers, like in New York, places like Murray's Cheese Shop was one of my first customers. Some of the local cheese shops, butcher shops, and specialty stores, and then it kind of grew. Whole Foods in Brooklyn was my first grocery store. Now we're in dozens of their stores around the country, and we're nationwide in Walmart.
We're Walmart,
4,000 Walmart stores. We're sold on Amazon. We're in Target. Lots of grocery stores around the country. So it's really grown to become kind of like a mainstream grocery product.
So I guess you're not doing any midnight shifts at the pizzeria anymore. You're doing this full time. It sounds like you created a monster basically here that's going to take your full attention.
It kind of got to it's something that grew out of a demand for the product that people kept asking me to make it. I started making it. And then once it was out into the world, it was just kind of like one piece of press created generated more eyes on the product. And I think I benefited from being in New York and being in Greenpoint, where I happen to be a lot of journalists, I think they saw it as like their hometown product and something they wanted to share.
They got behind it. And if you can make it there, you can make it anywhere.
It was tough. I used to, for 5 years, I drove my, I had a 95 Geo Prism with about 200,000 miles on it. I used to drive around New York with it weighed down with honey. It was like bottoming out on all the New York, all those New York potholes and personally delivering cases. But a lot of those stores and the relationships I had from personally slowly building with those first customers, I still have today, and those are still powerful, important relationships for the company. So I think doing it slow that way actually, worked out for us. And then on the restaurant side, we work with lots of restaurants around the country, lots of pizzerias. The popular pairing is to drizzle it on a hot sopressata or a pepperoni pie. It's just become this sort of proven crowd pleaser that people really like.
Created a whole new category of pizza by combining honey with salami, in that sense, spicy salamis, and it really was a paradigm shift in terms of pizzas, because it didn't exist before, at least not in most people's experience.
Yeah, I think the pizza community embraced it in part because at the time I was starting this, I was working in a pizzeria and I was making pizzerias. So a lot of these people were my peers and people I kind of got to know through the community. So the pizza community is really responsible for the growth of the product. And we they're like a family to us, a lot of our best customers in the pizza business are we consider family.
Well, in the Pizza Quest interview, I asked you this and we showed some photos of some other applications of honey. Now, it's not just a pizza product. And of course, I've been putting it often on salmon and on chicken, that's not related to pizza. Mm-hmm. Where can people who are watching this get more recipes, get in contact with you, find out maybe which stores close to them are carrying it. Is there, what's the best link for them?
Yeah, you can go to our website, mikeshothoney.com. We have a store locator there. We have a recipe section there with lots of different applications for the honey and different recipes to check out. And you can also hit us on Instagram at mikeshothoney, at mikeshothoney for all social media. But our Instagram has a lot of different recipes and food pairings to help give you some ideas.
And I think one of the most obvious and common pairings is how wonderful it is with cheese. Obviously on a pizza, we get that, but the photos that are either on Instagram or in the Pizza Quest interview show a cheese board with all different kinds of cheeses with drizzles of honey over it. So basically it really makes everything taste better is in the end. It's kind of a magic sauce in that it makes everything taste better. And we're just so glad you created it and established a whole new category of food and gave the sort of the consumer a new frame of reference, a new point of reference for how to push food to another level. So Mike, thank you so much for doing that. And thank you so much for being with us. For those who want more information, read the interview. We have contact information on the Pizza Quest interview, but also Mike's contacts through his Instagram, his website, and keep growing it. Who knows? Next time we talk to you, I'm expecting you'll be probably, it sounds like you're in almost every state in the country now, right?
I think we're in every state now. Yeah. I mean, we're still producing the same product. It's still very, a narrow product line. It's just the same product packed in a range of different pack sizes. This is the 12 ounce, but we also have things like our squeeze packets, which are for pizzerias who want to send them out to go. And we're about to launch these dip cups. This is actually a first look at our dip cups, which are, familiar to pizzerias. Sometimes they use these for other sauces, but we're going to be launching these for pizzerias in the next couple of months. So, yeah.
Well, keep it growing and keep it going. And stay in touch with us. Let us know especially if you have any new products coming out that you want us to let people know about. I know that there's going to be product extensions where you're going to take the honey and move them into some other things, but we can't talk about those yet. That's going to be for a future episode when the big reveal happens. Mike Kurtz, creator of Mike's Hot Honey, thank you so much for being on Pizza Talk with us today. And thank all of you for joining us. And we'll look forward to seeing you on the next episode of Pizza Talk. See you then. Pizza Quest is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org, and connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Thanks for listening.